Hi, it's Tony Brisky from Real Ghost Stories Online. Every single day, Jenny and myself do our best to try and create the best possible show for you. But it's not free to do that. We have a lot of hard costs on this end to distribute the show, produce the show, and put it out there for you. So we ask for your help by becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. We're doing our best to make it worth your while by giving you a bonus episode every single week with some of the best stories we can find. Also, exclusive video content, including our new monthly video feature, Seeing Ghosts, where we examine some of the best ghost photos and discuss them that we get into the show here at Real Ghost Stories Online. All I ask is that if you listen to the show on a regular basis, please consider helping support keeping it on the air. It's only $5 a month, or sign up for a full year at a time and get 1 month free. If you already are an EPP, thank you very much. If you're not yet, please consider supporting a show that you enjoy so we can continue creating it for you. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. And thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, could the victim of a tragic accident be trying to warn his friends? Also, time seems to pass at an accelerated rate while one listener visits a hotel. A beloved relative returns the gift in a dream, only the gift arrives about a month later. And near-death experiences leave one listener with a sensitivity to know where a missing girl may have gone. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brusky joining you once again.
Hello.
Hello, and how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just loving the month of January and the warm and the cold and the warm and the cold and the warm and the cold and the mild. And I shouldn't even say warm because 55, 50, not that warm.
Yeah.
It, by most people's standards. I suppose if you're in the Arctic and it gets to 50, nice day.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's kind of chilly.
Sure.
But it's wreaking havoc with my throat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's that fun season.
Yeah.
It's the fun season of not quite sure if you have a cold or not. And it just goes on that way till about June.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the leaves that eventually die and it never ends.
No.
It just keeps going. So there you go. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can also write it on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways of getting your stories to us here at the show. We're going to kick off the episode today with a letter that is coming into us. And this letter is coming into us from Rachel. She writes in, "Back in the summer of 1979, my stepbrother and I were 16. It was July and it was the 70s and most teens partied. I live in a small town in northern New Mexico. We had a ski area up in the mountains surrounding our town. The road to the ski area was very narrow and had a bunch of hairpin turns. During the summer months, teens like to go up there and party. My stepbrother's friend Jack was coming home after a wild night of partying at the ski hill. Jack was very drunk and or high. He rolled his little white VW bug several times, and the rumor was his head got stuck between the body of the car and the car door, smashing his head. Apparently, gray matter was coming out of his nose, and they had a closed casket funeral. The funeral was the first I had ever attended and made a big impression on me. At the cemetery, Jack's mother screamed in grief as the casket was lowered into the ground. Several weeks later, my stepbrother Jack's ex-girlfriend and some other kids decided it would be a great idea to go to the cemetery at night and sit on Jack's grave and smoke some pot. As they were sitting there, they suddenly heard a car crash coming down the road to the cemetery, but they couldn't see the accident. They got in the car, raced up the road to see what had happened. When they got to the road, they found no wreck, not even another car on the short road down the hill. They got spooked and never partied on Jack's grave again. Residual haunting? You tell me."
I think maybe it was a message of, hey, don't do that.
I think it was one of the very initial marketing campaigns for the war on drugs.
You think so?
I think Nancy Reagan is behind it. I think she was out there with sound effects and a large speaker and just trying to freak the children out. I don't know. I mean, it's... I'm going to guess it's something to do with Jack. I don't know if it's residual.
I wouldn't think residual.
I'm going to think more controlled. Because unless Jack's accident was right outside of the cemetery, which it didn't say it was, did it?
No.
Residual doesn't seem to make sense.
No.
In that case. Because residual tends to mean it's going on at the location in which it happened. So I'm going to guess it's something, it was some sort of a warning. I think it was... I don't know if it was necessarily meaning, you know, don't do that, or maybe just be aware of what can happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to lump it in with warnings like,
sure,
that's all bad.
Sure.
I don't know. I think maybe that's what the point was.
He was looking out for his friends.
And so what do? They hop in a car right away.
Exactly. See, unintended effects. It's not that the ghosts know everything.
No.
They can't, like, It's still, if it's a human ghost, it's still, you know, I think operating on human thought processes, and sometimes you have unintended consequences for what you're stirring up. And he may have like, oh, I'll do this and it'll be a big message, and not thinking, oh shit, they're going to jump in the car now, do the exact opposite of what I wanted them to do. And it, you know.
Right.
So I think that may be what have actually occurred there. Thank you for writing that in. Our phone number, 855-853-4802, to share your story with us. Phil writes in, hello, Brewskis. My story may seem lame in comparison to some I've heard on your show before, but I hope you find it interesting. I've always been sensitive to the paranormal, but I haven't experienced much. Just an old basement that I saw a few things in. An attic that always made me feel watched. An experience outside an abandoned house, but nothing that I couldn't explain away if I were a skeptic. But this is one event that I, to this day, cannot explain. A year or two back, I was staying at a very nice hotel by the Portland airport. The hotel was very populated. 20 to 30 high school basketball teams were staying at the hotel that weekend, so we were only able to get a room because we had a travel agent in the family. My aunt was in town and needed a place to stay, so my mom and I offered to stay at the hotel with her. They slept on the bed and I slept on an air mattress we brought, but no matter what we did, we never could make the thing inflate and stay inflated. I don't think that's paranormal, just a poor quality air mattress. Anyway, I had to sleep on a deflated air mattress, and that was naturally uncomfortable. So at about 1 a.m., I decided to forget about sleep and go to the 24-hour pool. I press for the elevator, take it down to the lobby, and I'm surprised to see that the entire lobby is empty. Nobody in the restaurant, nobody at the front desk. The pool is still and the weight room is totally empty. I thought that was a bit odd, considering there were about 500 or so teenage boys in the hotel, and at least one of them would be lifting weights or trying to get a snack, but I just thought that they must have a curfew. I was a bit concerned as to why nobody was at the front desk. I decided to enjoy the pool by myself. Felt like I was only in the pool for an hour, but looking up at the clock, I was surprised to see it was 4 a.m. Time flies. Checked the lobby again and still found it empty and silent. Not totally surprising for 4 a.m., but I was still surprised to see nobody at the front desk. Anyway, I go to the elevator and push for my floor, the fifth, and for some reason it stops on floor 4. And I get off without thinking. Then I realize the other elevator followed this elevator up. As I get out, the doors close and both elevators proceed to the going up. They come back to floor 4, ding, and open their doors. And they close, go down a floor, and come back up, ding, and open their doors. I don't know why, but I felt scared approaching these elevators. I walk down the hall thinking I'd take the stairs up one floor. I get to the stairwell and find it locked. Not only is that a fire hazard, but I know that for a fact the door was not locked before, as someone with us that day had taken the stairs up to the room earlier. Try as I might, it wouldn't budge. So my only way out was the elevators. The entire time, like clockwork, the elevators would go up, stop, and go down. Occasionally they would ding on the floors above and below, but they always would stop and ding on floor 4. As I stare at the elevators, I get a very odd feeling, almost as if something is watching me. And if I stayed on that floor too much longer, something awful would happen to me. I muster up the courage and walk to the elevator, all the way feeling more panicked. I get on one of them, and both elevators stop. Both doors open, not moving. I press floor 5, and to my relief, we go up. I was expecting to see some of the boys from the basketball team by the elevator controls playing some dumb prank, but I saw floor 5 was as empty as floor 4. I went to my room. I didn't sleep a wink. I listened and heard the elevators continue to stop and ding on the floor below me until around sunrise, when it all stopped. Was this all some dumb elevator test? Ghosts playing in the elevator? Something sinister wanting to keep me on floor 4? I don't know. To clarify, all throughout the day, the elevators only moved when called for, and the call elevator button on floor 4 never did light up. The scariest part is I've never had such an instinctual get-out-of-here-now feeling in my life. It actually felt like my life was on the line. Thank you guys for doing your show. Hope to become an EPP soon as I find a job. Thank you, Phil.
I wonder if something had happened on floor 4 before. That's hard to say.
And it's trying to, like, get a message, like, look at floor 4?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I think there's a couple things going on with the time seeming to go so fast. Maybe there's something going on there. And that's very odd for it to be as quiet as it was with a hotel full of teenage boys. I'm not going to say that part's paranormal. It's just odd.
It is odd. And it's kind of unsettling when you're in that sort of a setting where in most cases you'd have at least some activity.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily craziness, but something.
Yeah.
And for nothing to be going on, I don't know. It's always odd with elevators. I've always been kind of creeped out. I love elevators, but they creep me out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been more cases than not where you hear of things being seen in them, found in them, coming out of them, them just acting on their own. Is it just because it's like a giant conduit? It's just a big thing of energy. It's being run on something. There's a lot of electricity in them. That this, it's a good place within a building for something to...
I don't know if it's that or if it's so much. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that really thoroughly enjoys an elevator because you're always in the back of your mind or you're either dealing with a claustrophobic feeling or the fear of it falling or getting stuck and not being able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just not the funnest places. There's a lot of fear that surrounds elevators for one reason or another. I mean, not to the point where you have irrational behavior most of the time, but I think maybe it has something to do with that.
The energy that surrounds them because of all the people that have that feeling in there?
Maybe.
I thoroughly enjoy them.
That's fine. I'm not at all surprised.
You're hard-pressed to find. I thoroughly enjoy a good elevator ride.
I bet a bunch of our listeners are going to, you know, not even think about that as far as when they ride an elevator. But there's a lot of people that have a lot of issues.
No, you're right.
With elevators.
I completely agree. I agree there is. What I like they have these ones in very large buildings now that are, I don't know what the correct term would be for the elevator.
The express elevators?
It's like a jet.
Okay.
I mean, they go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow. I would just ride those for a couple hours if I could. If somebody would like be like, sir, we've been watching you on the security camera. And what exactly are you, why are you not leaving this elevator?
Not me.
Because I'm 8 and I love riding the elevator. Same with the escalators. I do get it's fun having a little kid and being able to go to the mall and just being able to ride the escalators, even when there's no purpose to it. Because as a kid, I always wanted to do that. My mom was like, no. You know, when we go up them, we go up them. Or when we go down them, we go down them, you know, with purpose.
Sure.
It was never just like my mom or my dad, like taking me to the escalator, bank and then riding them up and down 5 times in a row as I do with our children.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's cheap entertainment for Harper.
Yeah.
It gets us out of buying her candy or, spending a fortune on those little merry-go-round things. Or now they've got those, they're like a giant stuffed animal on wheels motorized.
And I see adults on those and that scares me.
Adults and kids just riding those loose around the mall. You know somebody's going to get creamed by a panda. It's just crazy.
I'm surprised no one has. It'll be a tragic panda accident at Westtown Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to be it'll be a sad day. I'd love to see that headline and then the image that accompanies it.
Mm-hmm.
So 855-853-4802. Paige writes in, hi, it's Paige from Minnesota. I'm writing in time to talk about my grandma and aunt's death. Both experiences were very unique to me, as I am not the only one to be sensitive. The morning my grandma passed away, I woke up with a sense of panic. We were feeling anxious and scared. I knew something bad was going to happen. I was about 10 years old at the time. My room felt heavy and I was sweating. I heard some commotion outside in the living room, and it was my grandma talking to my dad. I was relieved that there was still people awake, but it was really early in the morning. My dad worked graveyard shifts, so he'd be home early in the morning. My mom worked during the day. At this moment in time, both my mom and dad were home, my mom preparing to leave for work. I walked outside to the living room, and my grandma asked my dad to get a cup of water for her. As he came back with the water, I watched her eyes roll to the back of her head, and she fell onto the sofa behind her. I started crying. My mom called for an ambulance and ushered me out the door, telling me to wait for them to arrive. My grandma passed away later that day. The next story is about my aunt's death. She died about 2 years after my grandma, so I was about 12 when it happened. My aunt, my uncle's wife, had stomach cancer, I believe. She'd been sick for a while. Her husband, my uncle, had died the year before. My family was living in Minnesota while they were in California. The night we got the call that she had passed, there was a terrible thunderstorm. There was a loud crack of thunder, and I woke up in panic. My room felt heavy. I was filled with the sadness and anxiety. I heard my mom outside of the living room, and she was crying. I knew something bad had happened. A feeling of dread washed over me as she explained that my aunt had died. I didn't really notice anything when I was experiencing that. It wasn't until recently that I had figured out that those two situations were very similar. Thanks for reading my letter. I'll be writing in some more.
I think, so the similarity there is the fact that she had kind of a ominous feeling beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Is it a sign of sensitivity, of knowing something's going to happen, or?
I almost wonder if it's more of an, I mean, sensitivity and being an empath kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking more so the connection between family, the family members and her.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's how she knew something was up, is more so that connection, you know.
Sure.
Two people are fairly close.
Well, that would be, you would hope that that is what it is, because it would really suck just to be feeling like when anyone nearby is going to die.
Yeah.
You'd be constantly feeling down.
Yeah. And it just sounds like with just being two family members, I'm thinking that's more so what it is than just mm-hmm. an ability to know when somebody, anybody is going to die.
Or can you hone in on that? Can you be like, that person right there, I want to track them. You know, it's like putting the little sensors you can put on your keys now.
Yeah.
To find them and Bluetooth. Oh, there they are. They're over there. You can like, if you're empathic or sensitive, you pick the person you want to track their death of.
If that's the case and you are able to tell when even a complete stranger is going to die, I would distance yourself from those people.
That'd be kind of scary.
Well, you're going to start popping up on some kind of list. I mean, all these people start dying and you're the common, you know, the common thread there.
They knew when it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. They would end up on some sort of list. Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name's Stephanie from Phoenix, and I'd like to share my story with you. A little about me. I've always been a sensitive person. It's something I embrace now, but growing up, it would scare the shit out of me. I would always brush it off and pretend nothing happened. I was an extremely quiet individual, and I never told anyone about my experiences. I was so desperate to fit in and be accepted. As I got older, I continued to brush these things off and ignore these things so they would stop happening. Eventually, they did. I still couldn't sleep alone, ever, though. I'd make my little sister sleep with me until I was about 16 years old. My story began a few years ago. It was the year 2012. I was newly divorced, so I was living with my parents again. It was a Friday night. I was in bed, half awake, half asleep. TV was off. Suddenly, someone or something sat on my bed. I felt it and heard the bed creak. I was terrified. I felt like that little girl again, and that was scared to sleep alone. But as scared as I was, I quickly fell asleep again. That night, I dreamt that I was at the beach with my mom, sitting under some shade, and we were waiting for something. a sign. Finally, we saw a writing in the sand, and I said, "I'm okay," with a heart drawn around it. I felt the most amazing feeling. I knew who the message was from. The next morning, I woke up and I went straight to my sister's room to tell her what had happened to me and the night before. She then began to tell me that she had cried herself to sleep last night. I asked her why. She said, "I just felt sadness. I then felt like there was a connection with it, what happened to me and what happened to my sister, even though the two experiences were completely different. The connection was our cousin, Prisma. She was like a sister to my little sister and I, and she died in a car accident in 2009. Since her passing, I don't remember ever having any paranormal experiences. About a week or so later, my aunt, Prisma's mom, called me and told me that she had gotten a call from her niece, Floor, from her husband's side, no relation to me, at 6 a.m. telling her that Prisma had been with her for a few days now and that she urgently wanted to talk to her mom. Laura's a medium, so I wasn't surprised Prisma had gone to her to deliver her message. I think that what she wanted to tell me the night she sat on my bed, but I was too scared to listen. My aunt told me that Floor began to tell her that Prisma was sorry for being a bad daughter and to please forgive her. My aunt then said that Floor didn't sound like Floor anymore, that it was Prisma on the phone now. She continued saying, "Please, Mom, forgive me for being a rotten daughter. I'm sorry." My mom comforted her and said, "I forgive you." Then she said the phone went dead and that she tried calling her back, but she got no answer. These events touched me. Was my cousin unhappy on the other side because she needed forgiveness from her mother? After this, I started to get in touch with my spiritual side. To this day, I can tell you that I do see my cousin from time to time. She likes to visit me on the weekends when I don't have to wake up early or go to work. She always brings a ghost spirit dog or puppy with her. She does this so I don't get scared. She comes in my sleep. Funny side story. The first time she came to me, I was in bed sleeping. It was morning already, and I suddenly felt a dog on my bed. I was so scared, I didn't open my eyes. The dog started to sniff me and lick me. I thought it was going crazy. And it also had a bell collar because I could hear it. Anyway, a few days later, I was chatting with my spiritual teacher, and I asked her about the dog I felt on my bed. And she said there was indeed a small white dog on my bed that morning with a special collar, and that Prisma was behind all of it. This brought a smile to my face. Fast forward to now, my mom retired from work and got diagnosed with breast cancer about a month later. My mom's sister gave my mom a puppy as a gift so she won't be home alone while everyone was at work all day. She was given a small white puppy with a bell collar. We named her Daisy. I know this was the same dog I felt in my gut. Every time I shared a moment with this dog, it would take me back to the time I first felt the dog on my bed. Daisy was born in June of 2015. On my bed happened in May of 2015. Sorry for the long story. I hope you like it as much as I like telling it. And of course, I'm an EPP. Thanks for your awesome podcast, Stephanie.
I think that's neat that the dog from the dream may be connected to the dog in real life.
Mm-hmm.
That's really neat.
What I wonder about you when you have ghost dogs, are the ghost dogs someone else's pet that's dead?
I don't know.
Or is there a whole breed of ghost dogs on the other side?
I don't know.
Like, I wonder, you know, is it, you know, because do they stay in the family? You know, I mean, this one seemed to be like almost a sign of what was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But when sometimes we have stories of ghost pets and things of that nature, it's not too often where we have the story of the ghost human with the ghost pet.
Yeah.
But when that does occur, the ghost pet that they're with, is that like someone's pet from within that family, or is it just someone's pet that had passed on? Where does it come from on the other side? Do they just kind of find each? I'm just curious. You know, I don't know.
I don't know. I've always hoped that you get your pets back.
Mm-hmm.
Not have a huge pack of dogs then, but you know, I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm not just dismissing you with your absurd question. I really don't know.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. Does another ghost care for your pet until you get up there? Is it by itself? I mean, it's strange. It's bizarre, but it's what we talk about, you know? So I wonder these things.
It's a huge humane society.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Is there like a big, you don't have to worry about the no-kill shelters anymore because they're already dead, mm-hmm. and they're probably not going anywhere. But that indeed would be one large humane society. Mm-hmm. You hope they're just a giant field they can run around in.
Probably.
Until you show up.
Yeah.
What if you get the wrong pet? Like, that one looks just like mine. And then you get somebody else's dog. And is there like a big...
I doubt there's many mistakes in heaven.
Does it break into fisticuffs at some point?
I doubt it.
No, that's my golden retriever.
Yeah, I doubt
that's
it.
That's mine. It can get really messy. Jesse writes in, I've had three near-death experiences in my life, and after each one, strange thing happened. The last time I passed out from a massive blood clot in my leg, my doctor sat me down and got very serious, with a very serious look on her face, and stated, "Is this the closest to death you can get without actually dying?" This chilled me to the bone. Fast forward a month, and I'm sitting at home alone, and I suddenly feel like there's someone else in my apartment. I look around and see nothing, and go back to my business. That night, I have a dream that I'm in Chicago running from a fire in a university, and I look up in a window and see a girl. She's wearing a pink zip-up hoodie. Her eyes were pleading with me. In my dream, I knew she was a ghost. I just knew she was dead and she was asking for my help. I would run and grab people in my dream to show them, and every time I'd point her out to someone, she would fade to nothing. When I awoke, I thought it was really strange to dream something like that. She was in my dream for two more nights, and each night, she'd get angrier at me. After the third dream, I decided to try and find her online. I couldn't tell you why I searched missing girls from Chicago, but I did. As I was scrolling through the photos on the Chicago police site, I was laughing at myself. I honestly thought I had finally cracked. My heart dropped when I saw her picture. I instantly knew that it was her. I had found her. She went out running in a pink running suit and had never returned. Pink hoodie was part of her running suit. I could not believe that I had found her. The girl in my dream, the girl who came to me pleading and left so angry I thought she would hit me. I didn't know how to handle the situation. I was so dumbfounded, I decided to push it from my thought and go about my business. Kind of like when you're walking on the street and you trip and recover and pretend it never happened. Yeah, that's me. That night I had a dream where I was in a warehouse and a voice said, "They'll never find her." A door slammed in my dream and I woke up. I tried looking up updates on her case and they have not found her. They don't have any leads and she's basically been forgotten by most people. Keep in mind, I don't live in Chicago and I have no connection to it at all. I'm not in college and I don't profess to have any abilities. But things of this nature happen to me all the time. Not even always in a dream either. Sometimes, it will just be a thought in my head that pops in, or just feelings of dread. But my thoughts, dreams, feelings are never wrong. Something always follows them that confirm my feelings were correct. Thank you for listening.
I think it would be hard to get the trust of the police department if you went there and said, "Hey, I know where this missing girl is." But there's people that do that, that have the ability to just know things,
mm-hmm.
know things about cases.
And there's, I mean, sometimes police departments have hired out essentially psychics
mm-hmm.
to help them try and find missing people
mm-hmm.
in certain cases. I don't know how I would handle that if I was in that situation. I mean, you'd obviously need a good alibi for where you were on that night and everything. And because you have to weigh the options of, well, if you bring this up, you're going to be a suspect.
Right.
Do you want to deal with that? Do you trust the system enough that you will be, you know, eliminated from being a suspect fairly quickly? Or you also have the issue of, will they even take it seriously if someone just says they have a dream? Because quite honestly, I don't know this for a fact, but maybe some of our, it would be interesting to get the take on this from some of our friends who listen to the show that are officers mm-hmm. who work in law enforcement, because I'm going to take a wild guess that they probably get calls like that a lot.
Yeah.
And then to weed out the ones that are serious and the ones that are coming from people who do have something not quite right with them.
Yeah. You would almost hope for somebody that legitimately knows things,
mm-hmm.
that the first case that you're able to take to the police is something that was a cold case from before you were even able to have possibly committed
sure.
the crime, to where you obviously won't be a suspect.
You're like five.
Yeah, just to get your, you know, get your validity there.
Yeah. And then also have the calming, you know, sense to yourself of, okay, I'm really not going to be considered a suspect at this.
Right.
Yeah. How is that handled? I'd love to hear from someone in law enforcement how exactly that would be handled if that were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like this. This person has this case, or they had this dream, and then they bring it up. What is the process at that point? I don't know what, because I don't know. I'm just completely speculating.
Right.
As far as what I think may or may not happen. I know what would be going through my mind is I'd be like, oh, they're going to think I'm a suspect, and I don't want to even,
yeah.
you know.
Well, I think that's what most people would
sure.
would think.
But is that how it works? I don't know. Let us know. Fill us in on the message board, or give us a call, or shoot us an email to answer that question. Phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go to a caller. Hi.
Hey, this goes out to the Brewski Squad. You guys are doing an amazing job. My name is Daniel, and my story takes place in San Antonio, Texas. This was when I was about maybe 11 or 12. So this was back in 97, 98. And the way the design of my house at the time was, it was 1,400 square feet. It was in the shape of a square. You walk in, you hit the living room, you go toward the back left. When you go through a hallway, you have a master bedroom to the left, to the immediate left. You go down the hallway. My room is in the middle to the left, and then across from that bathroom. You go through to my sister's room. Through that door goes to her bathroom. Through that bathroom door goes to the dining room. Through the dining room, there's an entrance to the kitchen, back to the living room. So it's one big circle, and the reason why I wanted to say this is just you can get an idea of the layout and where I was at and how it happened. So I'm sitting in my room reading comic books, and my sister and my mom are in the bathroom. My mom's taking a shower, my sister's blow drying her hair, and then all of a sudden, very quiet, you know, nothing going on, I hear tapping, almost like a boot tapping. And the reason why I said boot tapping is that it has that low, you know, stride sound that when you walk in boots, it's not a very high pitch. Well, I heard about, you know, a few taps. Wasn't too sure how many. I can't really recall how many taps, but it was enough for me to kind of get my attention. And there was wood floor and tile throughout the house, so it reverberated, and I was able to hear it. And in that house, you can kind of get a distance of where somebody's at in the house, if they're calling or doing something, you can kind of tell. Well, it sounded like it was on the other side and near the kitchen or the dining room. Now, also in the kitchen, there was a doorway that led to the garage. So I stopped what I was doing. I went around through the living room into the kitchen, nothing. No fans were on, nothing was going, nothing. I even looked in the garage. It was dead silent. It wasn't windy. Nobody was outside doing anything. No neighbors were out talking, nothing. So I go back to my room, just paying no attention, still just go back to reading comics. And all of a sudden I hear the tapping again. It sounded like boot tapping, only this time it was added with a slight whistle, like somebody had some type of melody whistle. And it only went on for about 2 seconds. So when I heard that, I immediately jumped off my bed, ran over there to see what it was. Nothing. Still again, nothing on TV, nobody playing any music, nothing. And I went in, you know, I knocked on the door to the bathroom. I was like, Mari, are you wearing, my sister, I was like, are you wearing any shoes or anything? You know, and she's like, no, I'm not. And also my sister can't whistle. So at the end of it all, man, I didn't even know what was going on. And I had to sleep with my mom for like a week. I was literally that scared. And I come to find out that we moved later on that year up to Dallas. Well, my mom was down there fixing for the last part of the sales and everything for the house to go through. And she had heard a couple of things. And she heard, you know, a couple of sounds. TV had turned on at one point. She didn't even know. And, yeah, she said that she had a little bit of trouble sleeping a couple of nights. Still wasn't too sure what exactly it was, but nothing else came from that. Haven't experienced anything else, but I wanted to just bring my story out there. Maybe you guys can shed some light on what exactly that was or what it could be. I have started listening recently to your show, and I've just fallen immensely in love with it. And to hear Tony start as the number one and then Jenny come in, and you guys are your squad now, it is awesome. So kudos to you guys. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. I hope to keep hearing more, and maybe I can try to get my mom to tell her side of the story of whatever ghost encounter she's had throughout the years. But thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a good one. Bye.
It's hard to know if that's a residual energy from somebody that used to live in the home or if it's something just passing through, because it doesn't sound like it was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he heard it, but then his mom heard it or heard something, you know, that scared her later. It'd be interesting to know if it was the exact same thing.
Yeah, match up the stories.
Yeah.
See if you can get your mom to share her side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting to kind of hear the perspectives. It's always fun when you have that. Like more than one person telling the same experience.
And I could just imagine having all those rooms connect. You feel like you're chasing something,
mm-hmm.
trying to find those footsteps.
Yeah, very much so. Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. 855-853-4802, our number. Hi.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Carla calling. I wanted to respond to the episode Ghost Magnet, where someone had called in and responded to the first call that I made. I really appreciate that, and I can't tell you how touched I am that someone would reach out in that way. I also wanted to share another little story that I'd forgotten about. It seems listening to these podcasts, things just kind of come up that I packed away. But when my son was about four, we were in the car one afternoon on the way to pick up his sister from kindergarten, and he said to me, he said, "You know, you're not my real mommy." And I was kind of taken aback by that, and I asked him, "You know, what? You know, I'm pretty sure I am. Your birth was fairly memorable," and he didn't say anything. And so I said, "Well, why do you think I'm not your real mommy?" And he said, "Because I had another mommy and daddy." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Where do they live?" Because I thought, you know, he was being silly, because he's a really smart kid and he's always telling me funny things. And he said, "Well, they're dead." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "How do you remember that?" And he said, "Well, I just do." And I can't remember, you know, all the details. But he was insistent that my husband and I weren't his parents, weren't his original parents. And then I said, "Well, what were they like?" And he said, "Well, they took me to the store a lot." He said, "I was their only boy." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, do you remember anything else?" And he said, "No." He said, "I just remember that they took me to the store a lot, and they bought me lots of candy and toys." And, you know, I think that was kind of a joke. But, you know, he was four. So that is just either kind of spooky or very clever for a four-year-old. So there you go. That's my little story. But he was full of things like that. He was a very clever boy. and he was always up for making me laugh. So thanks. I really enjoyed the show. I'm almost caught up with everything, with all the EPPs and the current and past episodes. So thanks so much. Bye-bye.
What do you think there? Really a creative child that is trying to manipulate parents, or something going on there with a past life?
I don't know. That's kind of young to be making up stories about parents you used to have.
Maybe it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
Where there's some sort of weird recollection or memory there, but at the same time, he's like, yeah, this, I know this happened, but if I say this, maybe I can get this out of these people.
Mm-hmm.
That's something Harper would do.
It is.
It was a really cute story. Thank you for sharing that with us. The phone number, of course, 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. And, of course, if you like the show, you want to keep this thing on the air, please consider becoming an EPP. Get all those bonus episodes that she just talked about there. And you'll love them. Just jam-packed with some of the best episodes and best ghost stories that we have. You can sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Hi.
Hi, this is Mike. I just had something kind of strange happen. I work at a engineering firm. I run the soils lab for a geotechnical firm. And I was working late this evening because I got a bunch of samples in that they weren't processed, so it required working late. So I was the only one in the office. And my lab is probably 60 feet by 30 feet. And on one side of the lab, there's windows that run the entire length of the wall, and then probably half of the short side of the lab. So there's a lot of glass in there, so you typically get a lot of reflections and stuff. So it's not unusual to see a reflection of somebody in the glass, whether it's yourself or somebody else in the lab. But tonight, I was the only one there, and so I was working, and I kept looking out of the peripheral, and every time I look at it, it wouldn't be there. So I was thinking maybe it was just a reflection from a car or something driving by. There's a lot of glass, so our office sits maybe 100 yards off the road, and my lab isn't in line with the front door, so it would seem unlikely, but not necessarily impossible, for light to come in. So I was kind of passing it off as that, but as I was working, I noticed that I kept seeing it over and over again. It looked like it was walking both directions up and down the hallway, which is kind of strange, because if it was light from a car, it would be going in one direction, not necessarily both directions. So it's kind of strange. I kept working, and I was watching it. I saw movement again out of my peripheral, so I was watching it, and it didn't go anywhere. It stayed right there. So it was kind of creepy. And then it disappeared. So I was like, okay, well, that was strange. So I went back to work, and I saw it again. So I was looking at it out of my peripheral again. And when I turned to look at it, it wouldn't be there. So I go back to work, and then it would chill back up. And this happened, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. So I was looking at it, and it was a person that was standing out in the hallway that was wearing, had like a white, almost like a white robe. They're probably 5'10", 5'10-ish, medium build, had a white robe with a hood. It was almost kind of monk, like a monk, but not really. because it was on my peripheral, I couldn't really get a real good look at it. But, again, every time I look at it, it kind of disappeared, which is pretty strange, which, I was kind of creepy. And so I told it that it wasn't welcome. I said, you can't be here. You're not welcome here. You have to leave. And as soon as I did that and I acknowledged it, it seemed to be kind of a mistake, because it became a little more aggressive, for lack of a better word. It hadn't entered my lab up until after I had acknowledged it. And once I'd acknowledged it, then it entered my lab. And it seemed like it kept getting closer and closer, until at one point it was in the window. I could see that it was standing. Well, I felt something touch me on my left shoulder, and when I kind of glanced up into the window, I could see the figure standing directly behind me. And that pretty much freaked me out. So I was very forceful with it, saying, you can't be here. You have to leave. So I went into my office, which is adjoining to the lab, and I was doing some work in there, and my computer faces the door, and so in my peripheral again, I could see the whatever it was standing outside of my door. It wasn't coming into my office, but it was standing outside of the door in my lab. And so I told it again, it wasn't allowed to be there, and it had to leave. I was much more forceful with it that third time, and it seemed to have left. Well, it left the lab. It didn't leave the building. When I was back out in the lab, it was standing out in the hallway again, but it wasn't in the lab, so I guess you kind of have to pick your battles. I don't know if that's a win or a loss for me there, but it was kind of certainly freaky. The other thing that kind of freaked me out about it is that I couldn't sense it. I don't think that I'm necessarily super sensitive, but I can easily tell if something is around. And I couldn't sense that thing at all. And so that was something that's kind of bothersome. Because I've had another experience with something that I would say it was demonic. It knew my past. It knew conversations that I had had with people that nobody else would know and stuff. It was, and that thing, yeah, that's for another time. But I'd be interested to know what you guys think about that. All right. Thank you.
Who are you gonna call? Real Ghost Stories Online.
A robed figure, not usually a good thing.
Yeah, it's usually a sign of something kind of creepy. Something kind of off. I like it when people call in like right after something happens like that.
And you hear the little bit of panic in their voice.
You can hear the panic in his voice. You can hear the, I'm trying to reason this all out as I'm delivering this message in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sense of it all.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they're almost kind of relating his other experience, but, you know, should it be related? Maybe not. You know, it's all just kind of coming together at that one time.
Right. I don't know. I just, I don't think I'd be there alone anymore.
It'd be kind of difficult, I think, to be there alone. And it may be difficult to object to being there alone as well.
Sure.
When he's, in his case, it's his job, you know, and all that. To be like, can we hire someone else? What? We don't really have a budget for it, but, well, I mean, keep me company from the ghosts. Okay. did we put that job up on Monster yet to replace this guy? Okay. Yeah, that's probably how that would go.
Well, hopefully, you know, the more forceful asking him to leave will hold and we'll keep working.
You do have to wonder if the two are somewhat related. I would like to hear the other part of his story on whatever the thing knew or how it knew about him or how long ago that was. And is, because this doesn't sound super nice as far as whatever it is. What is eerie, and that's an interesting thing he brought up where he said he couldn't sense it. You know, he saw it, but, you know, you have the, we were talking about this the other day. You have the feeling when someone is in the room with you. Mm-hmm. At least I do.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, there's people have different feels to them. Even when you're not physically next to them, you can just tell. Some people, I think, can tell who's there or what, or at least that there's something there. Mm-hmm. Or someone, some living entity is nearby. And then to be witnessing something there and physically seeing it, but missing that element, the feeling element, that would be very unsettling as well.
Yeah, because then you'd start to question, well, how often are things here that I'm not aware of?
Exactly. Exactly. Good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. And please do share your other part of the story there, of the other thing that occurred with you. We'd love to hear it. As we always say, if you like the show, please support it. Keep us on the air. Become an EPP Extra Podcast person. We make it worth your while by giving you all those bonus episodes of the show in addition to the free ones that we put out every single week. Now up to 70-something of those, bonus video material. Lots of extras. We don't just say, hey, give us money and we're going to keep giving you the free show. We give you extras as well. So that's a nice little extra there for you. So check that out. $5 a month is all we ask. Help keep it on the air and enjoy the bonus episodes. Check it out. RealGhostStoriesOnline.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.